Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Doubters on Thursday, the 4th of June. And yeah, today we've got a very special guest. I'm continuing on my theme of self-doubt and creativity, the links between self-doubt and creativity. And today, as I said, very special guest. I'm really always excited about my guests, but today I've got my coach, Teresa Wilson, joining us from Manchester. Is that right? Manchester? Say hello, Teresa.
Hello.
There she is, yeah. So, we're going to explore the topic of the creative act of life. We came up with it in a session. We're not entirely sure what it means, but we'll see what comes out. It will be entertaining, I'm sure. So just to say a little bit about, just in case this is your first time here, this is The Doubters. This is my private online community. And this is a learning space. I've created this as a learning space. I'm 3 months in now. So I started at the beginning of March. It's now the beginning of June. 3 months in, and I'm loving doing this. I'm really enjoying it. This is a learning space. So I'm exploring all these different aspects related to this project that I'm exploring, the purpose of self-doubt. So all the different aspects of that I'm bringing here, I'm exploring with you and with my guests. So contributions are more than welcome. I would love your contributions. People who joined us here live today, please feel free to contribute through the chat box as we go along. I will open up later on, so you can come on and ask a question or start an argument. I've said that before. Contradict something we've said, make your contribution. So I'll be opening that up at about 20 to 5, so you can come on the recording, and I'll also create some time after the recording's finished, so you can come on then. So you can do that in private, you don't have to go out on recording. So that's how we work here, and we'll finish off at about 5 today. So self-doubt and creativity. I'm doing this little series, this is the second in the series, and as I said, I've got Teresa here joining me today. Going to introduce you, Teresa, and I like to introduce people through my connection with them. And where do I start with Teresa? She's a very, very special person to me. So I met Teresa on my first weekend training with Animas Centre for Coaching. We did the same diploma in transformational coaching, and we met on our first weekend in July 2016. Amazing when I think about that. And on our first weekend training, we do these little triads when we're training. Anybody in here who's doing the coaching training or done it will know. You do these triads, and Teresa and I were putting this triad together on the first weekend. And then she became my coach throughout the training, and then I just kept you, didn't I? We just kept working together. And yes, I've been working with her ever since. So now, like, is it 4 years? I keep saying 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. It's 4 years I've been working with you. And she's been so fundamental to my journey. And creativity has become a really important topic for me throughout that. I discovered my love for writing after my coaching journey, and I ended up writing a book, which I was really frightened about publishing. I'm sure we're probably going to get on to talking about that. And she's really supported me, so she's part of the reason why I'm here doing what I'm doing now. So Teresa is a life coach. She's based in Manchester. She's also the author of this book, Seven Creative Gremlins, which is write your way through doubt and fear to claim your creative life. I would say write your way with doubt and fear, but anyway. She says through.
Our first fight.
Let's have a fight. Yeah. So, Teresa, welcome. Is there anything you want to say to people to introduce yourself? Anything you want people to know about you before we start?
Well, funny enough, I was on a group supervision call this morning, and I introduced myself in such a fannying around, kind of not taking myself very seriously, being a bit daft kind of way. And afterwards, I thought, I always do that. And then I was mindful that I was speaking to you this afternoon, and you thought, no, actually, I'm really going to give some thought to how I'd like to introduce myself, because normally I would just make a comment about terrible lockdown here and kind of move on.
Your hair looks amazing, by the
way. It's held together with cling film. Yeah. Um, And I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this session, and I'm really mindful that, you know, I've loved the other sessions that you've done, and then it's like, gosh, what have I got to say? And I'm not here, you know, I'm not an expert. And I suppose in terms of the introduction, that's kind of really where I'd like to start, because there's something about the facts, and then there's something about felt experience. So the facts are, you know, that I had a background in community development, social justice, social impact's always been very important to me. I've worked as a coach for 7 years. It was wanting to make a difference in those kind of communities that was the reason I became a coach. So I've got 1,000 hours of coaching. I've coached in prisons. I've coached, GPs and practice managers as a coach mentor. I've worked as a mental health coach in organisations. And yet, those facts don't really seem to translate into much of a thing that has a felt sense. And I think that's kind of part of really what we'll talk about today.
This is always a problem with introducing yourself.
Absolutely. And you know, I could contrive some sort of introduction, you know, some label, something with tangibility to it, and just say I'm that. But it's the curiosity that there's so much, I don't know what I am. I don't know yet.
Well, you know, this is why I like to introduce people through my connection with them. Mm. So this is how I know this person. This is, I hope that explains a little bit of why this person's here and the importance of this person's here, because obviously introductions and labels, they're just labels, right? Mm. They don't tell you who that person is. Lovely.
So I'm here as a human being.
She's here as a human being. She's been very coach-like already, I can say.
Well, I talk about compassionate curiosity, and it's very alive in my kind of attitude when I work with others. So I really decided, actually, I want to dollop a great, you know, I want a big dollop of compassionate curiosity for myself as I sit here with you and kind of have no idea what this is going to be today.
Best way to enter a conversation, isn't it?
Yeah. No idea.
Okay, so we came up with this title, The Creative Act of Life. We were kind of, you know, chewing over the fat about what we wanted to say. And I guess where I would love to start, so creativity, I think how I've defined it when we were talking about this, is the outward expression of this unique inner, rich inner world that we all have. And it's like the journey between, you know, what's going on in here and what we express. And there's quite a lot of barriers along the way, isn't there? But I guess I'd really like to start about just talking about why is creativity important, and why is creativity important right now? Now, I don't know if you want to start saying that. Would you rather me start talking about that?
I've been thinking about that, and I think it's really important to start off the bat, given that we're having this conversation today at this very kind of particular moment in time, and hopefully moment in history, with all that's going on with the Black Lives Matter movement, and I think it's really relevant and really pertinent in the sense that, you know, creativity, as you say, is the bridge, if you like, from something that's formless and not known yet, and then it comes into form. And may hold form solidly, or may then go back in, and you know, it's usually quite iterative. So we don't get to cling to, or that seems to be antithetical to the energy of creativity. With the Black Lives Matter movement, I was thinking we're kind of, a lot of us are really sitting on a point of, I don't know. I don't know what I think, I don't know what I feel, I don't know what I don't know yet. I don't know how this is going to play out and what that means. How can I be useful? How can I serve? There's a lot of uncertainty. And that for me is an invitation for a sort of a creative response. It's an invitation to go in. But as we've talked about, you know, many times, and you've talked about on these podcasts, it's uncomfortable. And physiologically, neurologically, you know, we'd really rather know. And yet here we all are at this moment in time, collectively, sort of wondering, what does this all mean? And what's my part? Mm. So I think it is really important to kind of start with that.
Thank you for saying that. And, you know, as you talk about that, I'm thinking, what came out for me was that you said, we don't know what we don't know. And for me, that's the kind of the importance of getting creative about all of this stuff, about solutions, because yeah, it is uncomfortable. And when something's uncomfortable, and I guess this is why I really love self-doubt and why my work with you has been so important, because when something's uncomfortable, we often will go for a quick solution. Go for a quick solution, feel better about it, feel like I'm doing something, you know? And actually, that kind of like rushing to feel like I'm doing something or to find a comfortable solution can actually be more damaging in the long run. So this is why I really love the space of self-doubt, because it takes us into that kind of uncomfortable, you know, mess, that, you know, that discomfort, which is actually, I feel actually is quite important for us to be able to be in right now. And to soak up, yeah, the pain. Everybody's seen the suffering, you know, connecting with that a little bit. And in a way, if we're trying to brush over it too quickly and find solutions, that's not honouring that. It's not understanding. So so for me, you know, why is that related to creativity? Because this for me is where creativity comes from. So it is about findings, it is about finding expression, it's about finding something to do with that. But, you know, in a way, making that unique. So that's how we can make our own unique, meaningful contribution comes from that creative space. But yeah, getting it, but also getting into that space of we don't know what we don't know feels really important right now. So that's what feels really important for me right now, because if we're just rushing for solutions, we're going back to what we already know. And that's not going to work.
Yeah.
That's not what we need right now. It's so what we don't need right now. What we've done doesn't work. We don't know, like, you know, we're really interesting, scary, but also could be quite exciting time in history, because we are could be on the verge of creating something new here. And so, yeah, it feels important to be able to hold back and sit with that a bit. Yeah.
And I think you're right, looking forwards, not backwards, but it can be really difficult to look into fog. And that's obviously where the kind of the coaching relationship or a coaching approach or coaching questions can be so helpful, because that's kind of shining, like, it's like our assumptions are the fog, you know, and if we can push through those assumptions, then we can make connections. And that's where the learning is. And that's that forward momentum that you're talking about. Rather than looking backwards into the past, that's not creativity, that's not new space. So it's finding the new relationship between different bits of discordant meaning, but we have to push through our assumptions to do that. And that's really hard to do on our own by ourselves. And I think that's why I've been crying a lot over the past few days, you know, because there's so much beauty in all of this as well, and that desire for connection and that desire for collective meaning making, you know, seeing that happening just gets me every time. It's beautiful, you know, that's humanity at its best.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? I think, you know, so even since the start of the COVID crisis, and, you know, obviously it's moved into something else now, which is so important. You know, that's the thing that's got me every time, is seeing these connections and these moments of humanity and knowing that it's there. That's what gets me. You know, that's why I'm not a crier, as you know. I'm not a crier. I don't cry.
Sure, there's video evidence, Olivia.
Oh, is there? Yeah, probably somewhere. But yeah, no, that gets me, and it gets me in a really it warms my heart really to see that that's there, and that's what feels important right now. More of that. But it's not an easy place to get to, is it? Sometimes we have to go through the suffering. I had a guest on a few weeks ago, Dara Blumenthal. She did a lovely session. We were talking about embracing tenderness, and she talked about, this really stuck with me, she talked about suffering being this tenderizing place. Oh, it really stuck with me, that, because every time we go into that kind of moment of like pain, it's like, oh no, recognizing that, you know, that's where there's beauty there, that's where I can find connection when I know how to navigate it, because it's so easy to shut it down, isn't it? I know how to navigate this space, and there's so much richness there. Yeah. So Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the role of the coach, I think, because, you know, something that's, I think, you know, I'm so passionate about coaching, you're so passionate about coaching, we're coaches together, we do a lot of work together, we've grown together, you know, and you talked about sort of enabling to get beyond assumptions, but so many people, I mean, I know a lot of people on here probably do understand coaching, but, you know, so many people misunderstand coaching, and you know, how you talked about at the beginning, well, I'm not coming from the expert point of view. And actually, that's a challenge sometimes, isn't it? I think that's part of the challenge of coaching. I'd love to hear what you say about this. And actually, I've ended up writing a lot about coaching in my book. And I'm like, who the hell am I to be writing about coaching? But anyway, it's coming out. I'll come to you with all those doubts. But anyway, but you know, I've ended up writing about the role of coaching. But there's something about really, you know, the challenge of the coach, I think, is about not being anything but being. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
having an opinion. Not having any input here.
It's this is part of the evolution of my understanding of what it means to be a coach, which means that I become more incoherent when I talk about what I do for a living than I did when I started out. You know, so when I'd start out, it was quite clear, you know, I'm a life coach, or I'm a, you know, a transformational coach, or, you know, I've tried on lots of different labels. And, you know, as time goes on, it's just, I think lots of different things. I think it is a relationship, you know, and it's a relationship of equals. And already that's a really kind of subtle and complex thing, because especially if somebody's paying you, so somebody has a need and somebody has a service, and yet you're there as two human beings who, you know, when everything else drops away, here am I and here are you, and you'll impact on me and I'll impact on you, and then knowing how much to share, how much to bring, how what's flowing between, how much do you don't want to be too passive and just let everything flow from the client, you don't want to be kind of filling it all with you and your story and your stuff. And so it's such a delicate dance to be really true and authentic in every moment. You know, it's not something you learn and get right. You know, and even if you get it right for 5 minutes, there's another 5 minutes and then another 5 minutes. And so yeah, I'm definitely at a point where I have increased respect for the complexity of what it means, because it sounds so simple, doesn't it, just yeah. being with another human being.
Yeah.
It's fucking complex.
Swearing, hey. It's so true. And it's actually, I wrote about this because I wrote about what another thing I've written about is meditation. And meditation sounds like it should be so easy. Close your eyes, listen to your breath. It's like, whoa, okay. We know the challenge that brings. It took me 15 years to commit to a meditation practice. You know, and I've said, like, coaching is kind of the same thing. It sounds like it should be easy. Sit and listen. Don't have an opinion. You know, if in doubt, say nothing, really. You know, give space. Like, allow that person to be. It's like, yeah, it sounds like it should be easy, doesn't it? But it's actually, yeah, it's like I feel like coaching is like a creative, but it's almost like a dance sometimes. I feel like it's almost like a dance with somebody sometimes, like really being in that moment with somebody. And I think you talked about it being equal, and it's like, I think that's one of the things that makes it really unusual as like a professional relationship. It's like we come into here on equal terms. You're coming here to find out about you, but in you bringing you, I found out more about me, and it's like, you know, so it is a very unusual, very unique relationship, I find. Yeah.
And that, you know, there's the dance between, and you're right, because we're back to that, it's about connection, you are connected, and there's this invisible thread, and you know, it's in that dance, it's making sure that you don't want that thread to get too taut and too relaxed. It's how can you move together and be with and follow and know if they lean forward, you know, pulling back, and you're calibrating here within yourself as well. You know, you might be in your mind, you might be in your gut, you know, you might be your history may intrude in, your mind may intrude in. So you're doing this dance too. So yeah, it's something sounds phenomenally simple, and yet it's really electric. It's really alive, and beautiful. That's what makes it such a phenomenal. It's a really phenomenal way to be with another person as they show up and kind of go, here I am.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the thing that I really get such a buzz out of when I'm coaching somebody and I see them come alive, you know, and I see their creativity, I see their uniqueness, and I see their humanness, you know, start to come out. And then sometimes what I have to do is just sit back and just watch that. It's like, way, you know, like celebrating it. Yeah. And, you know, I think, so we're talking about creativity here, and I think one of the reasons I put, like, I'm doing a series around creativity is because, you know, there is a unique relationship I feel between creativity and self-doubt, and how I kind of discovered that was, you know, when I first started working with you, within when I was still training as a coach, and then I qualified, and I was so passionate about, I just want to do this my way. I don't want to do what everyone else is doing. You've heard this so many times, but it was just like I had so much resistance towards what I see, what you should be doing as a coach, you know, all these shoulds. And I was really caught up in that expectation, and I thought, I don't want to do that. I just don't want to do that. I want to do this my way. I was so passionate about bringing myself into this service and just forget about what I think people think I should be doing. No, nobody cares, really, you know. It's not, nobody cares about that. This is all going on in my head, you know. And I found my love for writing, which was a complete surprise for me. Didn't know that I could write, really. And I ended up just writing this book. And, you know, and every time I say, like, you know, I didn't set out to write a book, the book kind of wrote itself, it sounds like bullshit every time I say that, but it's true. You know, this kind of, like, I just started writing and it developed into something. And then I had this piece of material, so this piece of creativity, something that I had developed. So it was an expression of my unique inner world. And it was a true expression of me. You know, I was so excited. I loved the writing process. And I had this, like, finished article. And, you know, I had a period of about 5 months. I just didn't do anything with it because I was so frightened by this thing that I'd produced. I was like, what the hell? Who am I to produce this? And so I think this is why I see this relationship between self-doubt and creativity. I think it's so important to be creative, like as we talked about right now. But then as you kind of start to express that, you know, how it will introduce you to these different parts of yourself, you know. And then I got into it was all that, who do I think I am? What are they going to think of me? People are going to hate it. People are going to judge me. And of course, you know, again, nobody really cares. Nobody really cares. It's all going on in me. And that's what I feel, that this relationship. But, you know, it's, you think about, you know, self-doubt and creativity. What do you experience? I mean, let me hear it from you now.
I think what was coming into my mind as you were talking was this idea of kind of process versus product. And I think something really interesting, when I wrote Seven Creative Gremlins, a friend of mine said, you know, oh, it's, you know, it's great you've written that book. I'm not creative at all. And I was thinking, well, I said, you know, you're on your third business, you know, like you're an entrepreneur. You literally have an idea and then manifest something and make it real in the world. And, you know, there was nothing. You had the idea and now there's something. That, how is that not creative process? So there's something about the word creativity that I think people can get very literal for a start. And so in your story, there is that point where there was a literal thing, there was an object, you know, there was a, there was a, an expression of your creativity that was words on a page that became a book. So the first thing is to make that distinction, I think, between process and product, because the fact is you are living, and so there's like the process wrapped around it was how you wanted to approach your coaching career in the business and how you're living your life. So beyond the product, you live creatively, you think creatively, you offer yourself up creatively. And I think that's really interesting. And that's, I suppose, I love working with people who are in that space because that's interesting for me. And that's, as you say, like every client teaches me something. And I want to work with those people in that space because I am really hungry to constantly be evolving my thinking and feeling about that, because I'm also committed to living my life in that kind of creative process, even though it would be so much easier not to.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? I've thought that so many times.
And just take a goddamn, you know, path that somebody has laid out. I'd love to just be stomping along that path. And you talked about that so beautifully in the email that you sent out about the three-lane highway.
Yeah, so creativity is not the three-lane highway. It's the untrodden path, you know.
So whether or not there's a product, I think many of us are in that place of meaning-making, you know, connecting to that deeper wisdom, that inner wisdom, whether that's whether you feel it, hear it here or out there, whether you call it source, spirit, inspiration, God, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. If you're connecting, if there's that urge within you, then you're in that kind of creative process.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I never considered myself to be a creative person at all, ever. I mean, I was a business person. I worked in organisations for 20 odd years, you know, and I was a process person. I always get things done. I was very much a process person. You put something in front of me, I was a finisher, and I think that's why I rail so much against that kind of, you know, now trying to create outcomes for myself, because I know that, you know, if I'm given a goal, I will achieve it. You know, I will, pretty much. But is it the right goal? You know, this is the thing for me. It's like, you know, I believe, you know, this is what I believe about that stuff, is that, you know, my imagination's actually quite limited. When I, you know, you can focus, whatever you focus on is what you grow. That's that kind of saying, isn't there? And that's like, and that's so true. But is it, are you growing in the right direction? If you haven't given enough time and space for that creative process and those doubts and fears and to really be in that uncomfortable space, is like, you know, you're actually limiting yourself. Mm. That's what I really truly believe that. Mm. You know, so I really do resist like trying to create outcomes and trying to, like, and I think the reason for this is because I could not have planned the life I've got today. Mm. If I'd have, like, 20 years ago or whatever, you know, like, you know, what are you going to do in 20 years time? If I'd have chosen it, I would have completely sold myself short. I would have been some miserable, like, business person. I'd probably have a fancy car. I'd probably have lots of money, you know, but it's like, oh, you know, I'd be soulless. I'd be pretty soulless. So for me, the excitement and the journey has been in that kind of, like, all that uncertainty and flying by the seat of my pants most of the time. But but actually, you know, so you talked about, yeah, it's not the easy path, but it actually is really fulfilling, really fulfilling. You know, I don't know. I've never been bored. I've never been bored, and there's always something to do, isn't there? There's always something to do.
There is, and, you know, it's making me think that it's probably a truer place to be, given the massive levels of uncertainty that exist out there. Mm. You know, and there are arguments for saying, you know, that the world has always been, you know, at a kind of really a place full of uncertainty you know, and I'm sure you can point to, you know, points in history where that was so, but equally you can point to points in history where you would know that you'd leave school, get a job, you know, and stay in that job for years if that's what you chose. So I think there is something about, there's something exciting about the thought that if there are more and more people who are getting more and more comfortable with being able to sit in the mess for longer and longer, there is that sense that, you know, it's energetic resonance for what's going on out there. And if I can get better at it, can that then serve, and can I match, and be, you know, then as coaches, can we facilitate greater degree of comfort in the discomfort for others, and what might that mean for us as a society moving forwards?
Oh, yeah, you just summed it up so nicely there, you know, getting people to be able to sit in that discomfort and be with that, you know. That's what I want to do. That's what really the self-doubt work is. And it's so counterintuitive, really, is that people come and it's like, well, I'm not going to, you know, you're not going to get over self-doubt. You're not going to, it's not necessarily going to feel good, you know. And I'm sorry about that, but, you know, actually, there's this rich and rewarding journey, but it's a challenge most of the time. But, you know, for me, that's where the growth is, definitely where the growth is. And that's really what coaching is about, I think. The coaching space is about, growth. But for me, growth in a healthy way, but, you know, growth in a rewarding way, in a fulfilling way, in a productive way, you know, growth in a positive way, you know, I guess, or growth that we're choosing. I don't know. Yeah, anyway, just repeating it.
There's a lovely quote. I don't know if I've shared it with you before, but I was thinking about this session. I came on again and I thought, oh, I'm going to treat you to it because it's right up your alley.
Oh,
a fantastic neuroscientist called Bo Lotto. And he says, nothing interesting begins with knowing. It begins with doubt.
I love it. I must have that. Nothing interesting begins with knowing. Nothing interesting begins with knowing. It begins with doubt. Of course. You know, so for me, it's like doubt should like it is our natural state of being. You know, certainty is the fallacy. You know, that's like, you know, when we're certain about something, we should really be doubting ourselves a little bit more. Like that's the state we should be questioning. That's the state we should be trying to get over. Like, leave room for doubt, leave room for growth, leave room for creativity, leave room for, like, you know, that tenderizing, that suffering. Do you know what I mean? That brings you connection with people. Yeah.
And that's stepping into curiosity, and it's stepping into play. You know, play is the energy that supports us in being in that space. And it's active curiosity. It's wondering what if, you know, and if that's a stance to kind of, again, coming on this call, not knowing how it's going to go. Okay, well, just embodying that stance of curiosity in action, don't know what it's going to be like, you know, and getting it. So that's a nice kind of, that's a nice kind of go-to place for me, remembering that play is curiosity in action. And how can I embody more play as an antidote to that suffering? The suffering is and will and is inevitable, but it's not, that switch doesn't have to be on all the time. And in fact, it's counterproductive for it to be on all the time. So play and suffering, playing with those spaces.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's what I was saying about trying to learn to navigate it. And just so next week, interesting, I'm going to do a little episode of my own, and I'm going to talk about not responding with fear, which feels really, really, really congruent to the conversation we're having now. It's like recognizing the fear there, but not responding to it, you know, allowing ourselves to navigate that place with connection, play, curiosity, creativity, but all the doubts, the fears, the suffering as well, allowing all it to be. Because that's the human experience, right? Yeah. You know, when everyone says to me, how do you feel? I'm like, well, you know, there's a list of 10 things going on right now. Yeah, there's never one thing, is there?
No.
Complex, always complex and meaningful. So I guess the question I want to ask is, like, who, if somebody were to be listening to this conversation and you would like them to hear it, who would that person be? What would they be doing? What would they be going through right now? You know, who is this conversation calling for?
I think I have had, it's funny how when you're working with people, you know, you can kind of hit on a little jet stream of a particular theme. And recently I seem to have been working with a lot of people around, obviously, uncertainty, because there's so much of it out there, and how, if you take it as your own, it's that whole thing around what's mine and what's not, you know, and that tendency to kind of take too much. So it's for anyone who's possibly sitting with too much, and the invitation then to loosen your grip and loosen that flow and maybe let some of it flow out, because maybe some of it isn't yours.
It's so beautiful. Anyone who's sitting with too much.
And so then, you know, as we've been talking about creativity, that just that reassurance that it really is okay not to know. And it's, as you were saying, it's really human for it to hurt. And it's not a failing on your part that this feels sticky and icky and hard right now. You know, it's just that, you know, it sounds like you're a human. Just breathe into that.
You're
not on your
own. Oh, I love that. Anybody who's just feeling that is too much right now, and allowing them to just let go a bit of that and allow some other, you know, beautiful stuff to flow in. Yeah, I think that's a lovely intention. And I guess, you know, for me, it's like, yes, it's speaking to, I guess it's the same thing. It's like speaking to people who are experiencing like that uncertainty is closer, you know, that uncertainty might be closer to you right now than it probably is for me or for you or for probably many people on this call, actually. You know, it's knocking on the door. It's like, what the hell's going to happen next, you know? Is allowing that space to just open and flow a little bit, and without having to, you know, shut it down with a quick solution. And also, what I would say to anybody who's just like too busy, you know, this is the place I've come from, I think. And, you know, I think I was always so busy with my life. It was just like, but I made myself so busy, and I filled every little space in life with something to do or somewhere to be. I remember sometimes looking at my calendar for like weeks ahead, and I'd know what I was doing. I was just like, it's so worn down by it. And I'm so grateful my life's not like that anymore. So funny, I had a conversation with somebody the other day, and they were like, how did you fit time in for your training? And I was like, it wasn't really an issue for me, because I don't fill my life up with crap. My life has space, you know. I love that. And that's something that I really embrace now, and I resist filling that space too much.
It's a choice, isn't it? You know, it always makes me smile when people talk about, you know, not enough time. You know, there's not enough time. And I want to talk about time. It's like time is, you know, it's wholly predictable, you know, it doesn't vacillate or change. It's the choices that you're making with what you do with it, you know. And it's a fun notion to play with, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
Enough time.
Yeah, definitely.
Going on there.
Yeah, that's a good.
What a great game to avoid yourself.
That's a good thing to come into coaching with, though, isn't it? Really,
yeah.
I'm going to open up now. If anybody wants to come on and join in our conversation, feel free to unmute yourself. Put your camera on if you're feeling brave. I want to know, you know, what's come up for you. Any questions? Any contributions? What's important? Anything you disagree with? Just want to show a bit of love. Tell us how amazing we are. We'll take that.
It's a comment.
What was a question, Teresa?
Yeah.
I'm so bad at looking at this chat. I really need to get. What are your personal day-to-day life hacks in working through a year like 2022?
Lovely question. And I have been. There's a particular resource that I seem to have been sending to a lot of people, because it feels like actually this is a really immediate and pertinent and useful thing, and it's something that I've been playing with quite a lot. So because it can be so easy to be in our heads, and I mean, I'm not on social media. I came off many years ago because it's on the morning of the Brexit referendum announcement, I came up because I just needed a break. And, you know, so much of other people's fear and doubts and frustrations and anger.
So you needed a break in June 2016, and you've not gone back.
I've not gone back. I dip my toe in every now and then, and it's like, no, it's not good for me, you know, because in it all comes, and it's like, that's a personal choice, and I know not everybody can do that, and it might not be right for them. But if there's that stimulus, it tends to be kind of here, and with all of that kind of physiological charge through our systems, and the impact can be so great, and then you can end up not sleeping, and those churning thoughts, it's a thief, you know. It can take more than you bargained for. So the hack is around vagus nerve tone. So the vagus nerve is instrumental. It's a kind of, you know, brain body connector, but it can help us move from fight flight, which can get jammed on when we're.
We talked a bit about this last week, actually, with Amy. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And into that rest and digest. Mm. And there's just some really. It's closest to the body here.
You're really rubbing against your microphone as you do that.
So yeah. So
highly irritating. No, go on.
So just kind of rubbing here, with that intention and that awareness, and turning your head from side to side, because it kind of stretches out the vagus nerve. But it's also, if you were freaking out and if there was a woolly mammoth coming to get a hold of you, you would not be moving your head slowly, and your gaze would not be slow, it would be focused, you'd have that tunnel vision.
Yeah.
So it's ways of tricking the system, tricking your brain into relaxing. Mm-hmm. And then you can add a soft breath, because again, if you were frightened, that's not the noise that your ears would be expecting to hear. So that's just a really nice, simple, purposeful hack for getting your system back.
Fantastic.
And hitting that reset button, so that you can think more clearly and make better choices around what do you want to do with your precious energy,
that's
where we've all got more to give when we're working from a kind of regulated state.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had the Amy Morrison on last week, and she was talking about this employing, you know, getting in touch with the parasympathetic nervous system, you know, as opposed to that fight and flight. And what you're saying there is you're doing it physically. You're telling your brain physically that, there's no threat here. There's no threat here, you know.
Yeah.
There's no threat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like, it is a way of kind of communicating with that emotional part of our brain that actually doesn't deal with language. You know,
perfect.
Doesn't understand everything's okay, stop freaking out, you know, just get on with it. Understand that, you know.
Yeah.
So great advice. Yes, definitely. So I maybe will say a bit about, because it's funny, because somebody asked me about morning routines, actually, and I was going to talk a bit about it next week. But, you know, my morning routine is really important to me, and it just saves me. Actually, my morning routine is a bit ridiculous because it goes on quite a long time, but remember, I make space in my life for this stuff. So it consists of meditation, breathing exercises, yoga, a bit of reading, you know, a bit of 12-step reading, I hate the term life hack. I don't like it, because for me it speaks to like almost trying to get that kind of fighting for efficiency all the time. Let me get that next bit of efficiency. And I understand it, you know, I understand it. I do that sometimes there's better ways of getting to things. And actually, in the term that he's talking about here is like getting beyond that anxiety and stress. But that term life hack for me sort of speaks to like, oh yeah, let's just get that next bit of efficiency all the time. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's almost like I'm that anti-efficiency. Let's be not efficient, let's be creative, let's be messy, let's make a mess and just like then throw it away. You know, it's not a waste, and realize that's not a waste of time. Sounds like a Tony Robbins show. Do I sound like Tony Robbins? Oh my god. Yeah,
life hack. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Oh, you're like life hack. Yeah, 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 you know what I mean.
Mm.
I understand it, but yeah, so it's like, so I'm almost like getting away from life hacking, get into like wasting a bit of time and enjoying wasting that time. Meditation for me is like sort of almost like an anti-life hack, because that's spending time with ourselves, right? Spending time with myself, getting to know myself. Where am I today? You know, what's going on with this, you know, inner world, and what comes up for me, what inspiration comes. Like, yes, I think, you know, meditation is something that's really important for me.
So, and I think the gift of meditation, you know, if there's a one word, distillation, that would be another kind of life hack, I suppose, or a go-to, it's been a go-to for me, just that noticing, and to notice without judgment, is a great, just a great practice. That's like living meditation, isn't it? So, oh, look, I'm really agitated right now. And just noticing, I can't seem to, you know, hit refresh on Twitter or whatever it is, but just noticing without judgment.
So, I think you've been reading my book. It's funny because I talked about this, and it's another coaching skill, right? It's just noticing without judgment. And I talked about in the book, so I've talked about non-judgmental awareness, and I talked about these kind of three characters. We've got the noticer, the evaluator, and the judge. And I talked about them as like there's a team meeting going on, and the judge walks in, plops himself at the head of the table, so everyone's like, you know, in command there, you know, they're the person everyone's looking to and trying to please, you know. It's like, oh, get the information to the judge. And you've got the evaluator, who's the one who's sitting there like the administrator, who's like taking all notes and, you know, getting the story right and, you know, passing that on to the judge. And then you've got the noticer, who's just sitting there observing what's going on, but they're the one who's sitting in the back, they're quiet, and they're often getting overlooked, and, you know, they're not seen because they don't like to speak up, right? You know, so I'm talking about doing a bit of restructuring your team almost, you know, and like holding back on that judgment, because judgment's okay, but it should come with wisdom, you know. That's the thing. So yeah.
See, the gift of your creativity, Olivia, bringing these concepts alive in such a gorgeous and accessible way.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Get that book done. Come on, we're ready for it.
It's going well at the moment. Right, okay, I'm going to bring this recording to a close now, and then stick around, because we'll have a little private chat off air, and anything can come out there. But thank you so much, Teresa, for joining us for this wonderful conversation. It's such a pleasure and a privilege to have you here, and yeah, I can't express, you know, how much you mean to me. I think you know how much you've meant to my journey. So where can people find you? What are you available for, and where can people find you? Just to
finish off with that. So I'm at...
She's not on social media, she said. Don't bother looking there.
TeresaWilsonCoaching.com. And that's it. Yeah, and would love to have a conversation with anyone, you know, if they
didn't. She's up for anything, basically.
Yeah, that's me. Hashtag, this is why I'm not on social media. Get myself in trouble. Up for anything.
She brings out my naughty side, I should have said that. Great. Okay, so just to finish off the recording, thank you to everyone who's listened to the recording. Thank you to everyone who's joined us here live. And next week is going to be me. I'm going to do a little solo episode. I'd love to hear any of your contributions. You can make them through the link on the email I'm sending through. So that's oliviadesilva.com, doubters-contribution, and I will respond to those next week. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about how not to respond with fear. It feels like quite an important topic at these times, but I'll think about what I want to bring there. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you next week.